Welcome to Steppin' Out of Babylon, produced by Sue Supriano. Babylon is everywhere. It's the isms and schisms not only within the system, but within ourselves. Let's unify, stand aligned, and step out of Babylon. Hi, everybody. My name's Sue Supriano, and my guest today is Paul Polansky. And Paul Polansky has been living outside the United States, although he's from the United States. He's been living outside, mostly in Eastern Europe, for the last 37 years. He's a poet, a writer, and we just met. And I'm looking at his book right in front of me called Not a Refugee, The Plight of the Kosovo Roma. And then in parentheses, gypsies, because Roma is gypsies, after the 1999 war. And some other books by Paul Polansky are about Dvorak, Antonin, is that how you say it? Dvorak, My Father. A poetry book is Living Through It Twice. Another poetry book is Stray Dog, a novel called The Storm, and nonfiction, The Gypsies of Kosovo, a survey of their communities after the war, which was written for the Society for Threatened Peoples in Germany in the year 2000. So, and there are others, but you were telling me, Paul, that you went to live in India with gypsies, and I don't know, I know that the how people get called is so important. So I want to welcome you, and what do people want to be called?
Well, thank you for having me. I've lived with the Roma, which are commonly known as gypsies, for the past 10 years in Eastern Europe, and I was in India for a while trying to trace their origins from the different castes and outcasts in India. And the past year I've been in Kosovo, first as an advisor to the United Nations on their Roma refugees, and later living with the Romas themselves, trying to help them survive the ethnic cleansing that is going on today in Kosovo by the Albanians. NATO and the United States claim they bombed the Serbs to stop ethnic cleansing of the Albanians, but after NATO troops arrived in Kosovo, the returning Albanians started to liquidate and ethnically cleanse all of their minorities while NATO troops stood by.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was always such a totally weird story anyway. I mean, that's the ways of war and attack, often killing people to create more peace. I mean, I really had very strong feelings about what the United States was doing. And as we were talking about before we started on tape here, I've a little unclear about who's what, where, when in that part of the world, in the former Yugoslavia, and I imagine I'm not alone. So maybe you could make just a little more background and context, if you would, Paul Polansky.
Well, Kosovo used to be a part and still is a part of Yugoslavia. It was one of the republics along with Bosnia and Herzegovina, Slovenia, Croatia, Macedonia. But today, the majority Albanians have taken power in Kosovo. Although it technically remains a state of Yugoslavia, they are clamoring for independence and are trying to break away from Yugoslavia. At the moment, Kosovo is a United Nations protectorate with occupying NATO troops. How long that situation is going to go on, I'm not sure. Many of the American soldiers I interviewed in Kosovo felt that NATO had backed the wrong horse and that a new war would probably see them fighting against the very people they saved.
Mm-hmm. Well, that must be a very interesting situation for those soldiers, actually. I'm not sure how to ask it, but of course Vietnam pops immediately into my mind.
Yes, I think America has taken on foreign policy excursions, not with an overall master plan of controlling the planet, but usually through an uninformed, naive attitude. Having met our military and our State Department representatives abroad, I see no ulterior motives. I just see uninformed, very naive people getting involved in complex situations that they really haven't done their homework about.
Yeah. Well, that's really so incredible because, of course, it's a serious business for the people who suffer the consequences of this military intervention. And what about that? What's it like over there now?
Well, it depends on whose side you're on. If you're backing the Albanians, the country has returned to normal. People are working. They're opening new shops, the new cars in the streets, traffic jams down Main Street in the capital of Pristina every day. Life is going on, a lot of hustle and bustle. But if you're one of the minorities, you could be shot in broad daylight. If you speak anything but Albanian, if you're dark-skinned and you leave your ghetto neighborhood, you'll be kidnapped and killed. The minorities cannot really go back to their jobs before the war. They cannot go to school. They are not receiving the same aid as the Albanians. I made a survey for the United Nations and found that before the war, there were more than 19,000 gypsy homes. After NATO troops arrived, the returning Albanians burned down more than 14,000 gypsy homes. There was a pre-war population of 150,000 Roma in Kosovo. Before the NATO bombing, after NATO troops arrived, there were less than 20,000 gypsies still there.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's pretty horrendous. I was asking you also about your experience in Eastern Europe, and maybe we could talk even a little bit generally about this racism, which is, of course, we are well acquainted with in the United States also. It's not only in Eastern Europe, but if you would talk some about that.
Well, under communism, the cornerstone of their foreign policy was that there was no discrimination in the socialist countries. And it was really kept under cover. There was discrimination, especially in the army, but for the first time, the gypsies were able to get an apartment, get a job, go to school. Many became lawyers, doctors. It was a really heyday. But with the fall of communism, the Eastern Europeans have interpreted democracy as being able to hate and get rid of people they don't like. And so the further east you go in Europe today, the more violence there is against minorities, especially Roma gypsies. You have neo-Nazis rising their ugly head in all countries, starting with the Czech Republic. You have skinheads that come mainly from the police and the military, making attacks on minorities, especially dark-skinned gypsies. And so the violence and the genocide is really reminds me of what happened in the 1930s in Germany against the Jews.
Uh-huh. Are gypsies at the bottom of the totem pole? I don't have a picture in my mind of how gypsies look. And is it okay to use that word?
Well, that is how most of the world refers to the Roma. They came from northwest India about 700 years ago. They were the first dark-skinned people to enter Europe. They came with their Hindi caste system, their Hindi Punjabi language. They've always been used as cheap labor. In Kosovo, the Serbs used them as the backbone of their labor force in the mines and in the agricultural fields. Actually, during the war, the gypsies tried to escape Kosovo with the fleeing Albanians, but the Serbs turned the gypsies back at the border. They were easily recognizable by their dark skin. They were turned back because they didn't want to lose their cheap labor. And in all Eastern European countries, the gypsies have been used as a cheap source of labor to do the jobs that no one else wanted to do. The gypsies basically have not been nomadic for many generations. Mm-hmm. They have been settled. They live in homes, maybe small homes, but they live in homes. Their children try to go to school. This stereotype concept that people have of begging gypsies and chicken thieves and nomadic gypsies, that is several generations, if not several centuries old. You still see in ghettos in the big cities children begging, but they have, you know, it's very hard for a dark-skinned person to get a job in Eastern Europe. And if you can't get a job, you don't have many resources open to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that certainly seems to be a widespread dynamic. Well, that's very interesting that people aren't nomadic anymore. And, of course, there are these stereotypes, and part of the stereotype, too, is wonderful music and fun-loving and fortune-tellers and all those kinds of things. And you've lived with Roma people both in India and in Eastern Europe. That must be... Is there a lot of contrast, or could you talk about that? I know we want to talk about the politics, but I think that most of us just know nothing, even though there were some movies that helped a little.
Well, the gypsies or the Roma, in Kosovo, for example, I found they were still maintaining their Hindi caste system, and I found 14 different castes of Roma in Kosovo. You had your musician class, your blacksmith class, your trader class, your transporter class. And many of them have lost their language and their culture, but they still maintain their caste system. They're a very interesting people. Basically, they're very passive. Not all castes are musicians. Not all castes have fortune tellers. And it's been very enlightening to live with them and to see how closely they resemble our own people. They're not much different than us. We hear these romantic stories about them, but really they're human beings. The mothers are more interested in getting their children ready for school in the morning and packing a lunch for their husband who's going off to work. They live so much like we do that the differences are almost imperceptible.
Mm-hmm. And it's so many people were killed. Wow, that is incredible. What did you say? Oh, this like 15,000 homes were destroyed in the last couple years.
Well, since NATO troops arrived in Kosovo, the gypsies didn't lose many homes during the war. They suffered from the NATO bombing because many gypsies lived where the land was free, where no one else wanted to live. Under bridges, near polluting power plants, and an abandoned army barracks. So the bombing really affected the gypsies, really killed more gypsies than any other people.
Mm-hmm. But and that was U.S. bombing.
That was NATO bombing.
Which was U.S. bombing.
Well, pretty much, mainly American planes. But the gypsies really suffered after NATO troops arrived. That's when the returning Albanians started to burn their homes, saying they had collaborated with the Serbs. Actually, they were just as oppressed as the Albanians under the Serbs. During the war, the Serbs actually had a concentration camp for gypsies in Gračanica, not far from the Kosovo capital of Pristina. And several thousand gypsies were held there because gypsies speak Albanian. They usually have Albanian surnames. They are Muslim like the Albanians. And so the Serbs thought that here's a fifth column that's going to help the Albanians. And actually, the gypsies did take food to their Albanian neighbors who were hiding in the woods. Mm-hmm. And yet, when the Albanians returned and saw that the gypsies still had their homes intact, they thought, well, they must have collaborated with the Serbs, and they started to burn the gypsy homes. But the gypsies have suffered under the Serbs just as much as the Albanians.
Mm-hmm. Wow, well, they're really caught between a rock and a hard place, to say the least. So they get it from every side. The gypsies are really scapegoated. That is an impression that I've had for a long time. And it's interesting that you say that they lost their culture, at least in Kosovo, where you're talking about so much, and yet they're just getting it from being dark-skinned. I mean, it just sounds like racism everywhere, which is just so terrible.
I think the basic cause is racism. Many people think that the conflict today in the Balkans has something to do with religion, but I think religion plays a very small part. It's mainly a problem of deep-seated hate and race. For example, the Albanians in Kosovo are Muslim. Most of the gypsies are Muslim. Yet is the Albanian Muslims ethnically cleansing the Gypsy Muslims. The Albanian Catholics are ethnically cleansing the Croat Catholics who've been there for 700 years, who originally opened up Kosovo to the world through the mining. And so it's actually the Serb Orthodox who are defending the Gypsy Muslims, and it's the Albanian Muslims who are killing the Gypsy Muslims. So religion doesn't really play a big part in this Kosovo conflict. It's more a matter of race.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's interesting because, I mean, even as you're saying these, my mind is going, ugh, I can't keep all this straight. Who's killing who? And although, I mean, that's me sitting here in my nice living room in Berkeley, whereas when you got, you know, when you're getting killed and people around you are getting killed, I mean, it's not an abstract notion, that is for sure.
No, it's the real reality of today. If NATO wants to really bring peace to Kosovo, they're going to have to put 500,000 troops in there for 50 years. That's the reality of it. Trying to have a token peacekeeping force there is not stopping the ethnic cleansing, is not stopping the killing, and I can only see it getting worse.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's not usually with my own bias, it's not usually the real goal of troops to keep peace. I mean, there's usually political goals. I don't know about those particular, particular people there, but there's always politics behind all these things, it seems to me. Would you like to talk some about that, Paul Polansky?
Well, I think the main political issue in Kosovo today is that the majority Albanians want independence from Yugoslavia. They want their own country, but they have this misconception that Albania or Kosovo should only be for Albanians. They are in no way interested in a multi-ethnic society. And yet NATO went to war with the backing of the United Nations to maintain an ethnic multicultural society in Kosovo. And that goal has been defeated already. And I don't think that we can prop up a multi-ethnic society in Kosovo without having 500,000 troops there.
Mm-hmm. And that's do you think that's likely to happen?
No, I don't think it's likely to happen. I think within the next few months you're going to see the remnants of the Kosovo Liberation Army turning their weapons against NATO troops, trying to force them to leave, and then trying to declare an independent Kosovo for themselves.
Well, I know when you say Kosovo Liberation Army, I remember there was a lot of controversy about were they as bad as they were made out to be? What was the real dynamic? Who are they really? I definitely don't know the answers to any of these questions. And even to keep it simple enough so that most people can know what you're talking about. But again, to come back to the context of all this.
The CIA had the Kosovo Liberation Army listed as a terrorist organization for many years, and suddenly Madeleine Albright asked them to change it and declare them a patriotic army fighting for independence. It has been well documented through many journalists and newspapers and magazines that the Kosovo Liberation Army mainly got its money and supplies from Albanian drug rings throughout Europe. The Albanians control most of the drugs in the large European capitals, such as Paris, Rome.
Drugs like hard drugs, like heroin and...
Yes, all drugs. And the arms have basically come into Albania and then come across the porous border into Kosovo. I think Kosovo, if it gets its independence, will quickly become a drug state. Even today, months after the war, you see young men driving new sports cars down the main street of Pristina. Obviously, they're making fast money, and it usually comes from drugs. And so I feel that drugs plays an important role in financing the Kosovo Liberation Army. It plays an important role in why they want to have their own state. The Serbs, when they tried to stop these terrorist units in Kosovo, said, well, we're only doing what the Americans taught us to do in Vietnam. That is to go in and wipe out the terrorists. I certainly am not pro-Serbian because I felt that they used the same methods and tactics against civilians that we used in Vietnam, and I was always against that. And so although I'm not pro-Serbian, I think we have to look and see what the goal of the Kosovo Liberation Army has been and will be, and see why they want their own state, not for democratic purposes, not for a multi-ethnic society, not to defend minorities, but to really have a drug state that can be used as a trampoline to pass drugs to the rest of Europe.
Mm-hmm. And what might they be doing otherwise? I'm saying that because drugs are so much part of the world, the whole parallel economies of drugs that kind of, I mean, just major part of what's going on.
Unfortunately, that is true, but I don't think we have to use NATO and the United States to prop up a protectorate that's based on drugs. Mm-hmm. Kosovo today is a United Nations protectorate. And yet the United Nations are not looking after the people that really need help. No humanitarian aid is going to rebuild gypsy homes in Kosovo. The United Nations is working desperately to repatriate and send back gypsy refugees to Kosovo, even paying them to go back, $100 per adult, $50 per children. And yet when they're returned, inevitably they're murdered. Mm-hmm. Only last week, four gypsies were encouraged to go back to their village under United Nations security. Their homes were burned. They had no homes to live in. The United Nations gave them a tent. They were the vanguard of 28 gypsies, supposedly, who were going to return to their village. Their first night in their hometown, in their village, they were executed by the Albanians, all shot in the head at close range. So the United Nations is encouraging gypsies to go back to Kosovo, but they are giving them no protection, and they are being kidnapped and killed.
Mm-hmm. Did you know these people? You must know a lot of these folks.
Yes, I knew these four men. I was in a refugee camp with them when I was able to get humanitarian aid for them. They helped me unload the trucks. I knew them very well.
Oh, I'm so sorry. This is all very personal, I'm sure, for you. And I guess that's the thing, to be able to touch people. And your book of poetry, Paul Polansky, called Not a Refugee, The Plight of the Kosovo Roma Gypsies After the 1999 War, I'm sure would very much touch people. Can this book be found?
Yes, this book is published by Voice of Roma in Sebastopol, California. The book can be ordered by writing to P.O. Box 514, Sebastopol, California, 95473, or you can order it by phone by calling 707-823-7941.
Okay, well, we'll give that again in 5 minutes when we're just about done, because I know it's kind of quick to pop this on people. So, and you were also working, you got involved because you were working for the United Nations for a minute?
Well, I have been a Rome activist in Prague, Czech Republic, for several years, trying to help the Rome in their education and getting jobs and actually surviving in the Czech Republic, which is one of the most racist nations in Eastern Europe today. And I had published several books on the situation of Roma in Eastern Europe, and especially the Czech Republic, in Prague. And when the United Nations needed an expert on Roma, they sent me out to Kosovo and asked me to advise them on the Roma refugees that were pouring into their displaced persons camps. But when I became the only non-Rome to live in their main camp, they asked me to spy on the gypsies. I thought it was an unusual request, but they wanted to know if the gypsies were hoarding guns and hand grenades in their tents. Of course, I found nothing, only an abandoned, depressed people, victims of the Serbs, victims of the Albanians, victims of NATO, and victims of the United Nations.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's amazing. You talked about the misinformation of the people who make the decisions. I mean, how they're not informed and they're naive, and yet there are these incredible consequences for people. And I think I asked you about the military people who are there from the United States and stuff. You said they realized they were on the wrong side. I mean, that must be very weird for the military also, demoralizing, I mean, confusing.
Well, this is not my interpretation. This is what American soldiers have told me. I spoke with one MP who said he had not investigated a murder case in 5 years, yet his first week in Kosovo, he had to investigate several murders a day of Albanians killing old age pensioner Serbs because they didn't want to leave their homeland. Many American soldiers have told me that we backed the wrong side during the war. They saw no real war damage until they were in Kosovo for several weeks, and then the returning Albanians started to burn homes and drive out the minorities. Many American soldiers told me there was practically no war damage in Kosovo until after the Albanian refugees returned and went on a rampage of burning and killing.
Wasn't there a lot of war damage from the bombing of the of NATO, the U.S. / U.S.?
Well, I've been to over 300 communities in Kosovo to see how the Roma are surviving. And on my journeys, I've come across very, very little bombing damage. You would come across the bridge with a hole in it about the size of a basketball. Obviously, a missile or bomb had gone through the bridge but hadn't exploded. There were a few army barracks that were twisted, but really no war damage. I saw one very tall building in downtown Pristina. Obviously, a missile had gone through the roof, but again had not exploded, and only the first two floors were charred. There were some broken windows, but the building, the structure, was in great shape. So I think most of the bombs we dropped on Kosovo really didn't go off.
Uh-huh. Well, I guess that's a little piece of good news. Well, we're about out of time. So besides the address, I would like to know what you think that we listeners could be doing to be helpful to the remaining living Roma people, because so many people have been killed. And I also want to ask if there's any kind of movement against this racism all over Eastern Europe and in Kosovo.
Well, I think the best thing that the American public could do is to pressure their congressmen into forcing our government to allow Romani gypsy refugees from Kosovo refugee status in this country. During the war, we brought thousands, tens of thousands of Albanian refugees to Fort Dix, New Jersey, and housed them until it was safe to go back to Kosovo. But no NATO country is allowing Roma refugees into their countries. Every nation has this stereotype stigma of gypsies. And because of this, they think they're nomadic, they think they're illiterate, they think they're chicken thieves, and they don't want them as refugees. I've lived with these people. They're good, honest, hardworking people who can read and write, who have gone to school. Many are doctors, engineers, lawyers. And yet, because of this stigma, this stereotyped stigma that we have against gypsies, no NATO country is allowing them to have refugee status. And I've been to Washington, D.C. 4 times trying to get refugee status for the Kosovo Roma. And I've knocked on many doors at the State Department, and it's just impossible. No one wants to listen. Mm-hmm. I spoke with Richard Holbrooke's assistant at the United Nations, and he just said, look, the Albanians are the people we went there to save. They're our number one priority. Those are the people we're going to help.
Well, this whatever it is, politics and lack of information is really quite horrifying. I'm sorry to say we're out of time. So if you want to give real quickly, Paul Polansky, that address and phone number again for getting your book and getting in touch with you, and hopefully people have learned a lot more about the situation from hearing you.
Yes, the book can be ordered from Voice of Roma, P.O. Box 514, Sebastopol, California, 95473. The book is called Not a Refugee, The Plight of the Kosovo Roma Gypsies After the 1999 War. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much, Paul Polansky. And my name's Sue Supriano. Thanks for listening.